second phase of honey gathering is from around October until the middle of January, right? So it would be right now. So could you tell me a little bit about how that is going?
So yeah, so like you was mentioning earlier, so this is like the second sort of season in the year for honey collection. And so right now, so even as you see, even last time when we spoke, I was talking to you about how the rains have been very erratic and, you know, have been a little heavier in the coming, I mean, in these last few years. So that's that same trend has continued even in this season as well. And so if you see in terms of nilgiris, especially, so that's honey collection is still a bit low here in nilgiris. So what we have done as part of Last Forest is, so basically we had worked with a few groups and a little bit in like Gujarat as well. So they're also similar honey gatherers who sort of, you know, work with the Apis rosata, the giant rotweed. And so some of our team members had gone earlier to sort of give training on sustainable harvesting and how we sort of like Keystone Last Forest has been working with the honey gatherers in nilgiris for a while. So and right now we've taken some honey from the from these groups just to just not to slow down the supply of honey. So right now I can tell you it's been very low in terms of collection in nilgiris, but from other of these places we've been getting some more honey as well. So yeah, and then in terms of even if you see so in our label, so right now we had nilgiri honey before. So right now we've changed the name of the whole SKU to Wild Origins honey. So it doesn't only just cover or like only from honey from nilgiris, but also from the Western Ghats and these other places as well. So that is one sort of strategy we've changed in terms of honey for this season.
So what are the honey gatherers in the nilgiris doing to sort of, you know, diversify their livelihoods, given that the rainfall is erratic? What are some other things that they've taken up?
Yeah, so right now it would be more to do with jobs in the towns, basically in the cities. So they have not been working in the villages. They've been wanting honey gathering for a bit, so they moved down to places like, you know, Coimbatore or Metapalayam, which has been which is close to the nilgiris, and so they sort of like, you know, go for labor work there. And then you also see like nilgiris has like a lot of tea, so they go to these tea estates, so your tea factories. So that's also sort of a daily wage sort of work which they go for. And also like one of the like recently like one of the honey gatherers like unfortunately he had an accident with a wild like the gaur, the Indian gaur. So and then he kind of passed away like few months back, and so he was one of the most traditional people who was doing it for a very long time. And so it was through him that the others were getting trained as well. So because his loss is also very it's a very big one in terms of honey gatherers here. So yeah, and then also there have been because of all these conflicts that happened, they've been going less into the forest to do the honey gathering, and it's more of these works only, the like the labor work or tea estate work which they have. So that's been what they've adapted to in this season.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. That sounds really heartbreaking. Since you are based in the nilgiris, biodiversity is such a huge part of the work that you do and the crops that you grow. And as you mentioned, there are elephants there. You mentioned the gaur incident. So how do you think climate change has sort of impacted the wildlife that lives there as well? And in turn, what has that effect been on the agricultural practices, so to say?
So in the nilgiris right now, it's becoming more to do towards real estate, and as you can see, a lot of houses which have come up in the last few years. So this has seen a lot of, and even in terms of agriculture, so you've seen a lot of forest clearing. So you have a lot of tea which grows which has expanded into the forest, and also a lot of bit of agriculture land. So you can see like there's one part next to Kothiri called Kukulthurai Valley, which has a lot of vegetables being grown. So these, in terms of when the vegetables are being grown, so again the forest cover has been I mean, like even though there are like strict laws for not to not clear trees, you can still see a lot of encroachment of agriculture and real estate. And so this has seen a lot of I mean increase in a lot of human wildlife conflict. So you see nowadays a lot of like bears, also bears, like leopards, wild boars. So all these sort of, so even the wild boar population has gone down a bit, but the other animals, the you know, there's a lot of because almost every day you see some interaction with the with humans. You see bears breaking down, you know, bakery shelves and stuff like that. Yeah, so that has, I mean, the climate change, I mean, yeah, so because of these practices, it has impacted the climate. So like I said, the rainfall, anyway, it's like quite erratic. And yeah, so even if when that happens, there's a lot of conflict in that front. And yes, so this also, I mean, this also, it makes people make like the communities, once they go into the forest or like fields, for, even for normal people, when they go into the tea fields or like agriculture fields, they there's a little bit of hesitancy as to like, do we go and risk ourselves to go, to, I mean, like, you know, interact with these animals sometimes. So yeah, that has been sort of like a major shift in the conflict between humans and.
You mentioned that they're turning to these daily wage jobs, like at the estates and stuff.
Right.
How does do they also turn to other traditional farming activities, such as you mentioned, like millet farming is a big thing, right? That
Right.
you that last forest also supports. So could you tell me a little bit more about how that has helped, if at all it has?
So these Dhanigatas, they have some a little bit land in the villages where they come from. And so I mean it's sort of, I mean sometimes, I mean earlier they used to do honey gathering as well as like farming also, which they have been, which they do at the moment too. And it's mostly, if you see, if you take the areas of like Kotagiri where Las Vegas is located, so a little bit towards like the forest side, so they do a lot of millet cultivation. And so I mean that's also, I mean they have their farms, but I can, we're not sure like how much of their like the crop or the yield is actually being able to market. So which is something, that's where Las Forest comes in. So we were just talking to Adimalai, so our producer company, as to see how much more we can like take on from them, like to see if, say, we can provide a marketplace for these products. So basically, like millets, of course, that is one crop which is like a year-round crop which they do. And we have a lot of like the byproducts of millet as well. So we have like millet mixes, millet cookies, for example. Yeah, and then we have ragi, and then there's like the dry ragi, and all this. So that's what we're trying to like offload some bit from them. So apart from millets, they do a lot of turmeric. Cashew has been going on in few areas. Then there's pepper and yeah, some cloves, cinnamon, and all these spices are in small quantities. But so they comprise, I mean, if the members have like a land, or it comprises of all these spices and food items like in parts. So that's what they're also trying to like sell nowadays. And yes, so that's the most alternative for honey hunting there.
So how is this aspect of unseasonal rainfalls, erratic rainfalls, or other climate changes, how are they impacting cashews and spices that they grow as well?
So cashews, they haven't been a problem so far because it's like a decent sort of rate which they have in comparison to the market. So the moving of cashew has, I mean, we've not bought it in terms of Last Forest as yet, as an SKU for Last Forest, but with Adimalai, it's been with, and with the communities, it's been moving like quite decently. So and just like recently, they had like a huge sort of like a harvest of or a collection of cashew, which sort of lasted them for more than like 4 or 5 months, and that helped also, you know, in terms of supply and demand. So that helped sustain that little bit. Whereas I think spices, sometimes you have like the whole question of if it rains too much or if there's like wild animals, they're walking through the farms. So a lot of destruction happens like that. So I think cashew has been little, and so that's also we try to be incorporate more to last person, see how we can do like another branding or packaging and just, you know, sell it off. I mean, sell it or take a marketplace for these communities.
Also wanted to ask, what kind of millets do these members grow specifically? I know ragi is a big one, but what are some other millets that they grow?
So apart from ragi, we have samai, which is the little millet, and the foxtail millet, which is tene. So there's both. These are the main sort of three millets which grow in the area.
In recent years, how do you think unseasonal rainfall has impacted these millets specifically? We hear so much about millets being climate resilient, right? So is it something you've seen on the ground as well? How has climate change impacted these millets?
Yes, definitely. So millets are very like a hardy crop, so you don't see a lot of damage in terms of climate or like climatic changes, because they can still survive and can be used like throughout the year. But millets, I think more it's used to, I mean, it's the damage you might see, while like I said, elephants are a big part, I mean big part of the forest here. So elephants also sometimes come into these fields. And also, you have a lot of like sometimes there's like infestation of locust or like rats, for example. If that's there, then that's a problem for the millets. But in terms of climate, not too much of a problem with the climate. The only thing is probably in terms of how we at last also we're still looking at how we can you know make millets more you know sort of viable or easy for the people to buy. Because like the offtake in terms of the customer side has been quite low. So even though right now you have a lot of people advocating for healthy food and organic food, and especially millets make a huge part of that. So even a lot of this sort of voicing towards millets, it's like the offtake has been a bit poor of them in the market, I would say. So yeah, that is one challenge for millets. Like I think last for us in the last 1 year, we've seen, I mean, even our purchase from Adimalai as a producer company has been very low. So it's been hardly like 0.1% of our whole sort of portfolio of products we get. So millets have been only to that low level. And so what we've been trying to do is we're trying to get more of you know value-added millet products. So I was mentioning, so all these ready mixes, they're quite easy to make. So you have like a biryani mix or like pongal mix, which are made from these millets, so which are easy to make. So it's just like 2 minute like normal preparation. So probably those, if you see, like you can use them as what do you say, market them more, you know, make a lot of effort into. Maybe we can do like a small branding exercise just for millets, because now if you, I mean, if we all know that like a lot if you a lot of people have been moving towards like organic and healthy food, and so we just need to like get it like a proper identify a proper market for these products, and maybe yeah a little branding exercise, because we had a branding exercise with coffee earlier. Through another project, Mountain Partnership initiative. So they also work with communities in the mountain regions, and so they with them we did a project which had like a rebranding of coffee, and it added more information on like where these products are coming from and where these communities are like who are working with these products. So maybe a similar exercise like that with the millets. So that has seen, I mean, you can see a lot of change in terms of consumer sort of information which they get if they buy from our shops, or even if it's like on our website, or even like some exports, because we have a lot of networks which we are part of, and so the offtake there could be a little bit more. So yeah, so that is probably one thing because we had a I mean we had a meeting sometime back as well, just to see what other products we can work on. So this was one of the main points that was spoken in terms of millets. And so hopefully with these few steps we can see a little bit of a better purchase in the millets in the coming years.
In terms of the communities in the region and you mentioned that there's people are growing millets, people are growing cashews, there's spices, and all of these various different kinds of crops. But given that some of them are moving away from agricultural practices as well, right? Like they're picking up more daily wage activities. What do you like? What are some other ways you imagine that can help farmers in the region stick to agricultural practices and not, move away from it and not move to like cities in search of other opportunities? Because I imagine that in the Nilgiris, especially the climate crisis, the effects of it are more apparent, right? So, what are some other ways do you imagine that can help farmers in the region diversify their livelihoods without having to step away from agriculture?
Right. So one main thing, again, talking coming back in terms of mass forest and what we work with them. So like I was mentioning, so sometimes you have like, so there might be demand. So for example, there was a demand for pepper, like probably like a few kilos of pepper, which a customer had asked earlier, and there was no sort of supply in the back end. At like the main farmers who used to make or used to give pepper to Adimare, they didn't have any stock. So even like across the whole Nilgiris, there wasn't any stock. The opposite also happens. So sometimes, so there's a lot of. So I'm just taking a few examples here. So there's like one Amla season. There was one season where there was a lot of Amla collection, but I mean, we won't be able to find customers or markets to move the Amla. So I think one thing is like when Adimani, they and last for us, we work closely with these farmers and communities to ensure that there's a system where there's constant, like supply for the demand which is met, and also the other way around. So yeah, so and then so that's a big part of what we'll have to start playing as like market facilitators for these products. And yeah, so and then also like some this was one thing which we really need to do actively, like in terms of because we already know like I mean we already know the like honey and other personal care products which they're not an issue at the moment because we have a steady market for these. So the other portfolio, the products like this and the others portfolio, like how do we leverage these more and to like ensure that these gaps don't happen for these products. And also in terms of sometimes certification can help a lot. So a lot of these farmers in the region are PGS certified. So that also gives them an initiative. Yeah, to keep their farms organic, and also they know the value of the produce. So like on an in an outside world, if they were to go sell these products, and if it's organic and they have like a better I mean the price which they will demand will be like a proper price from the market. So I think so these also can be one of the like main points which can be used to like encourage them to stop. Encourage them to do a lot more of the farming practices and not like go into like daily wage and things. So that again goes back to what like the principles of what Keystone Last Forest and Adimalai have been trying to incorporate for all these years, and I think that is still the language and that's the sort of like outlook we'll have to have going forward to ensure that this stays this way.
Do you think farmers are relying on each other more and more as the effects of climate change become more apparent? Do you see that there's more collaboration, more communities coming together, or is it more or less the same?
Communities over there, I mean, they usually are very like tight-knit, so they know or they don't mind sharing knowledge and like helping each other out during like bad times. And also like yeah, of course they have a lot of help from so even from the like NGO side, and also the like some of the government side also they have a lot of plans and basically, and also they're like the companies we work with, they're all shareholders of Adimalai. So basically there are no So only in the office where the main like the production and everything takes place, there's only like one or two people who are not from the community, but it's all community run, all shareholders of the community. So they also have like a whole stronger ownership of their products and what and with who they work with. So like the climate is always is something which is questionable here, as to like how, like when what is going to change and stuff like that. But yes, PGA is also, so there's a lot of knowledge sharing that happens between for farmers, and I think during that time there's a lot of so preventable measures which they which they can take up, in terms of rain or in terms of I mean drought is very rare. I mean it doesn't happen, but yeah, so in terms of so even for like how the pesticides or even so those some sort of those things are also mitigated or like are minimal. So even that happens in these farms. But like so the PGS also gives a platform for these farmers to talk to each other, and just share experiences, share their knowledge, and so yeah, I think that there's some steps have been taken like that. So example, you can make like a check dam for if there's heavy rain, or if they yeah, so there's like a fence, like a bio fence which they do put around their farms, of probably say citronella or like lemongrass, which will repel insects and animals, for example. Rosemary is a good example of that as well. So probably like how yeah, so I think those have helped farmers in between themselves, when they do like a peer review method. So yeah, so I think those techniques they have been using it quite a bit.
Looking forward, maybe like a decade or two, because perhaps by working in the region for as long as you have a sense of what has changed. And you've mentioned like land use patterns with the tea estates sort of coming in and encroaching more, or agriculture coming into the forest, right? But also changing weather patterns impacting forest produce itself. And then people moving out from doing some of these agricultural or foraging practices. So both because you've been in this landscape for as long as you have, I just want to understand that perhaps you might have a plan of how you are going to approach being an organization that is here over time and what that looks like for you.
I mean, so for last forest, we always have to be prepared for any sort of change, because we have been so even the last so like decade or 15 years which we've been working, so we have we so every it's not the same every single time, so every time we have to be prepared to sort of change your outlook sometimes, because yeah, you can't have the same sort of strategy or game plan going like immediately forward. So for example, like I was talking to you, so so right now immediately we are seeing how we can leverage these other products, so that helps not only in the community but also in terms of the customer and last word as an enterprise also to grow, so that way and we'd have to take it very like thoughtfully ahead, because like a few years back what we had taken a decision to sort of to do the opposite, to cut down all these other SKUs we had, like for food and handicrafts and things like that, and focus only on honey and personal care. So that worked for a bit. I mean, we had just like few product categories, but a lot of SKUs within those categories. But yeah, so now we see in terms of so we've not been making profits in the last couple of years. So how? So we obviously have to keep thinking of how we can change that. And so right now, the immediate like plan would be to incorporate more of these products, and only just not to bring everything together and sort of get stuck there. You see, you can't like have a huge like supply of a lot of products and then not be able to sell it, and that's again just to like another waste of like time, money, and space for both the communities and for the organization. So. So we can tread carefully, bring in maybe all these products one by one into our portfolio, back again to our portfolio, and also probably some if we can get a lot of, I mean, some sort of exercise going for the for the branding of these products, and yeah. So this in turn, if as an organization, if we do it like very like thoughtfully and with a little bit of strategic planning, So that would help. It will take the whole ecosystem. It will help the ecosystem which we've built for the producer company and the NGO as well. So yeah, that ecosystem will stay strong if say, you know, sort of we can do this. And yes, and also like a producer company, Adimani, we're working with also, they also have a lot of like, you know, like inputs and like strong workshops going through. So that also like, so it ensures that not a lot of them discontinue, like we were talking about discontinue their farming practices and go to other like labor work. So yeah, I think that would be like just like immediate plan going forward. And yeah, so like so in the next decade, I won't be able to tell you because it's always a changing landscape here, both in terms of markets as well as like we're talking about the climate and land use patterns. So yeah, so I think that would be something, yeah, going forward, we'll be looking at doing.